Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 165 of The Morning After. I'm Jesse Kiefer.
I'm Sarah Kamen.
On today's show, Chef Brothers Max and Eli Sussman. They're here along with the team from Humboldt and Jackson, Bill, Sam, and Pam, where they will be popping up their Detroit-inspired project, Ed and Bev's. Later in the show, we'll be morning after quizzing this crew. But first, Sarah Kamen, you have a little bit of food news for us.
I do, unfortunately, have some food news to share with you guys.
I think it's my favorite part of the show, to be honest.
Are you serious?
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Just because it's a surprise for me.
It is, know? Yeah.
Because, like, the quiz is a surprise for you.
Oh, I know. I love that part.
And they're both surprises for us.
And they're all surprises for you guys. Well, we have a couple of food theft cases in the news. There's some food theft going around town. And by town, I mean Connecticut. Four men were arrested in a pizza shop that they worked in Connecticut. And Connecticut's like a big pizza town, right?
Like I have absolutely
like
no idea.
Like, that's the only thing Connecticut has to offer.
Does anyone else have any thoughts about Connecticut pizza? Because I've never heard that.
I've never been.
Okay. Never been.
I heard Providence has good pizza.
Okay, great.
Okay, so not
super useful.
Right.
Moving on. So four men who worked at this pizza place were busted for also running a cocaine ring out of the pizza shop.
Okay, that's not surprising.
That's not.
Now that we have been to. We have been to
those establishments. Oh, you've been there. You've been to that place.
We've been to those kinds of places.
Yeah.
But not in Connecticut.
I think that's probably a common thing that happens in Connecticut. I don't know why I think that. I just feel like that makes sense to me.
It'd be more surprising if they weren't.
That's right.
You know?
That is more surprising. Yeah, but the saddest part about this is that one of the guys who was part of the big cocaine ring also ran a karaoke night.
Yeah!
Yeah.
Now I've definitely been to that
just
place.
Like you, Bill. Just like you.
I mean, how else are you going to stay up all night and sing your favorite?
Well, it's like, well, now it all
song.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this might be sad for the people, you know, who that was like their best night of the week. They're like, karaoke night. Yeah.
Karaoke's off now.
No, maybe. Maybe it's on hold while they're in prison.
Yeah. It's definitely not as fun without the cocaine.
That's right. So another
you don't
theft.
Sound as good either. And you don't talk as fast.
Everyone's always better at karaoke when they're coked up. It's like, I got to sing all the songs. So many songs I have to sing. So another theft that I wanted to bring to your attention actually happened in Spain. This is kind of like, maybe this is like a little bit bigger deal. So there's a tapas bar in Cadiz, Spain.
No way.
Jesse! Okay, so they were robbed. The criminals forced the door open. They stole all the cash. They took a telephone, but they also took 7 legs of Iberico ham.
Whoa.
Now, chefs, I know that must hit hard.
Yes.
Thanks, Eli Sussman. So, okay.
Wait, like, what's, like, the price point on,
it's like $130. But here's the thing. So these were not the brightest chefs. Maybe they had...
The chefs or the thieves?
I'm sorry, the thieves. The chefs were very smart.
That may be, too.
The thieves, they took 7 legs of ham, and they, like, ran away. So the guy who owns the tapas bar is, like, on his phone. He's, like, talking to the cops. His mom is there. His mother-in-law is there. And his wife notices there's, like, a trail of fat, like, down the street. And they follow the trail of fat to this guy's home. And they're like, knock, knock, can we have our ham back? Like, we found you by trailing the fat. So
was he just sitting on his couch, just like eating
just like
tons
eating ham.
Of ham?
Just like the most like Renaissance festival thing. Just like
7, like he was just like bathing in the ham. Exactly. So yeah, pretty much that's what happened. And
I'm pretty impressed that they were able to carry 7 legs of ham down the block. I mean, I don't
it was
think
several
I could,
criminals.
I don't think I could carry that from like one end of the studio to the other. That's just heavy, right?
Maybe have you work on that.
Okay. They were taking them over to the karaoke hall, you know?
Yeah. Well, maybe you need to work out because you never know when you're going to have to carry 7 lengths of ham.
Obviously.
Okay, lastly, this one is a little painful because it's about Whole Foods and, you know. So have you guys heard about, like, the peeled orange scandal that's been happening? Eli? So apparently Whole Foods has been selling peeled oranges in plastic containers. And they have written on the containers, like, made here. So they've actually been paying someone to peel these oranges and then put them in plastic containers and sell them on the shelves at Whole Foods. And some woman walked by and, like, tweeted, like, hey, Whole Foods, you know, it's such a bummer that we couldn't find, like, a natural, like, container for oranges. You know, something like a little bit more earth friendly, and then we could stock them that way.
Yeah, called peel.
Like called peel. Their peel.
Called their peel.
Yeah, yeah. And it's Whole Foods, and they claim to be like really environmentally conscious and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, this kind of blew up on the internet, and Whole Foods was like, yeah, you're right.
I don't really get the controversy, though, because I think that it's a great thing, because peeling oranges is so hard.
Okay.
And insanely time consuming.
So you would buy those.
I definitely would.
They're the only oranges that I ever buy.
I mean, but okay. Then they can
I've been, for years, I've been like, if only these oranges came without these
like in
unbelievably
large,
annoying
in
peels.
In large plastic containers
yeah.
that are then
singularly
thrown away.
Packed as well.
Singularly
for
packed.
For your lunch
yes.
break, yeah.
Fresh,
I just keep a,
fresh made here. Made
I keep
right
an
here.
Orange peeler on retainer, so.
Okay.
Yeah, they just follow me ever and peel my oranges, so I don't have to do it.
Well, I like that they said it. They were made right here, as if the oranges were like cooked
yeah.
in the Whole Foods and not just peeled, like. Yeah. Like some surf person like had to peel them, mm-hmm. like probably some like orphan
it,
that they got.
Yeah, so it's like manually peeled.
Yeah, they have like an orange peeling sweatshop in the back of Whole Foods.
They should start labeling all their stuff. They're like, we put this on the shelves yes. here.
Yeah,
we unpack this vegetables here on site.
Local coconut made right here
yeah.
because we put them there.
Yeah. I just don't know why didn't anybody like. Argue when they, you know, they picked up their pre-chopped stir fry, you know, mix or their like peeled garlic.
Because chopped vegetables don't have naturally compostable peels, Jesse.
Okay. All right. Well,
it's all pretty lazy.
Yes.
Yeah.
So lazy. I was
so
gonna say,
whoever
yeah.
is the laziest person ever, Eli, go get them now because Whole Foods has taken them away. All right. That's it.
Those are fantastic.
They were okay.
We'll take a break here on the morning after. We're going to come back with Max and Eli Sussman, Bill and Pam and Sam from Humble and Jackson.
Yep.
You're listening to Dues Paid by Rec Tech.
Ever since I was little, my grandma lives in Florida, and every time I call her, she's always like, I know it's you because I can hear the smile in your voice. Growing up, when my grandpa was still alive, he loved to fish. So we had this saying, grandpa catches the fish and grandma cooks the fish. So she always used to make the best grouper around. My sister and I would always be like her little helpers in the kitchen during the process. So, and sometimes we'd go fishing with my grandpa. I actually love the seafood counter. Ever since this store opened, there's always been like something special about it. Like seeing the full fish and like seeing them cut everything and fillet everything by hand. I'm a big fish eater, so it's just has a special place for me. My name is Jennifer Heal, and I'm the social media and digital marketing specialist for the Northeast region of Whole Foods Market.
This has been a message from our proud partner, Whole Foods Brooklyn. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Hi, how are you? My name is Andrew WK. They say when things are very delicious, it must be Heritage Radio.
Sure must be. Who says that? All right, Bill Reed, Pam Reed, and Sam Naheed are the owners of Wine Bar, an American tasting room and event space, Humboldt and Jackson in Williamsburg. They are here in the studio, as well as Max and Eli Sussman, who are brothers and currently the chefs behind Ed and Bev's, a Detroit diner-style lunch pop-up at Humboldt and Jackson for the whole month of March. They're also the proprietors and chefs of Semisa, a Mediterranean restaurant at Bergen, and authors of several cookbooks such as This Is a Cookbook, Recipes for Real Life. Ow! Welcome to the show, everybody.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Standing up.
We're looking brothers at that, because I have a couple brothers, and we're pretty ugly.
Well, I actually think that today, in general, is like a super sexy show.
It
yes.
is.
Yeah, I actually wrote that on the Facebook. I was like, sorry this is radio, because there are a lot of sexy people in this room.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now I feel awkward. You're welcome, Pam. I mostly met you.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's going on? Let's start with the H and the J crew. I know you guys were here about a year ago, and I'm sure a lot has changed. We talked about, like, American wine last time and, like, some of the menu that you were rolling out, but now you're, like, you got a lot going on.
It's been a busy year, for sure.
Yeah.
I think last time we were here, we didn't have so much of a...
You were just nascent
a concept
babies.
Or any goals. It was like, let's open and let's just keep staying open.
That's a good goal, though.
Let's like keep that goal in mind.
Yeah.
And let's not pay each other and work a lot. And let's see if that works.
So it worked.
Yeah, so far we're still open.
Still here.
And we just start to pay each other. Pam got her first check a few weeks ago.
Hey! Nice.
$50. $50. It felt good.
Don't spend it all in
it
one place.
It felt good, you know.
I have to say, though, you did bring us wine and snacks. So for poor people, you guys are like ballers, for sure.
Well, that was, I mean, you guys reimburse. We heard a reimbursement was happening from Harry.
They brought a $400 bottle.
Yeah, it was
of
a $400 bottle of wine from Arizona.
Yeah, just, you know, your check will be in the mail.
Yeah,
no,
it'll definitely be in the mail.
It's coming.
It's been, we were talking about it this morning, and it's definitely been a wild 12 months for sure since last time we spoke. And definitely our base concept has been the same heart and soul of keeping it what it was, which was a catering hall of sorts within a neighborhood, to keep it very much that. And with the addition of amazing people coming through, it really has turned it into something more special than we actually thought it was going to be.
Cool. Are you still all American?
Yeah.
All American, all the time, all day.
Will
every
that,
day.
Will that change depending
never,
on who wins the election?
Never. The concept really is, I mean, it says all American, but it's as local as we can get it, with products that we're really proud of, that we make here, that we can enjoy here right now, as well as, you know, not just with food, but with drinks. And in the beginning, we were just wine and beer. So focus was definitely on wine mainly. And then we had some taps of beer. And then the menu is expanded based on the customer, which is our regular neighbors, and what they want to drink, what they've liked. And, you know, that expanded to the food program, because when we opened, we had 5 items, in which none of them was made in-house. So now we have over 20 items, and most of them are made in-house, all the way down to, like, reductions. And I have 3 employees. One is a saucier. Is that how you say it? Okay.
Yeah.
Trained. Her name is Alec Perkins. Really awesome girl. Chris, the curd bird, is a fromagier.
Uh-huh.
And then we have Gay Face.
That's Sam?
He's for gay. Yeah. He's pro-gay. Sam's great. No, but he's the wine sum. So we have 3 employees, and they're all have specialties. Cheese, sauce, and wine. So, I mean... That really helps our program grow really quickly.
How do you guys incorporate the Ed and Bev's pop-up into kind of everyday Humboldt and Jackson business?
With some spunk. I mean, really, our space is kind of like we have 2 kitchens, essentially. One, it was we run out of the bar, so it's very limited in what we can do out there, but it is a really yummy rotating menu. With the kitchen concept is like these guys are trained chefs that we always work with and really awesome humans, so they take care of our space because they're enjoying everything that comes with being in the space. And to go from their lunch... You know, breakfast all day concept to our dinner is fairly easy because you're dealing with pros. So it's like they're in and out and they do their thing and they give everyone a good time. And our job is to, you know, relay that message, whether it's to know the menu or to really answer any questions they may have about who we're working with, especially these guys. So
you want to speak to that, Max?
I would like to address that point. yeah, I mean, Ed and Bev's is a diner, and we have got the menu, and we didn't have a place to do it properly. And Humboldt and Jackson is like this great, warm, welcoming, inviting space with the bar. So the menu and the food that we're doing really fits the vibe of the place. So when you walk in, it feels, I think, like a seamless experience.
But how do you translate? I mean, I understand, like, you're cooking the food there, but, like, Ed and Bev's feels like it's a whole concept, like being that it is a diner food and Humboldt and Jackson is not a diner per se. So how do you sort of like integrate, like you both use the space in a really functional way, but how does that sort of like concept carry over, if at all? Like, how do you make it feel like a Detroit diner when it's not?
Honestly, the goal isn't actually to make Humboldt and Jackson feel like a Detroit diner. The goal is to have people come to Humboldt and Jackson and experience the food. So the food actually speaks to what we're trying to do from like a conceptual standpoint. But Humboldt and Jackson is just a nice place to come and eat a meal. Mm-hmm. And they haven't been doing lunch. So our food speaks really strongly to kind of like a pretty quick lunch, you know? It's not like a sprawling dinner type thing. And a lot of the concepts that they do at night there tend to be, I mean, they can speak to this more than I can, but they tend to be the type of things that people are kind of working out concepts and everything like that. So when they asked us to come in, they knew that Ed and Bev's already existed, and we kind of had the menu ready to go. And so we thought that it would be great for people in the neighborhood to be able to come by and get, you know, some homemade soups
lunch.
And sandwiches.
There's nowhere to eat lunch.
Yeah, there's nowhere to
eat
lunch.
There's one place, and they do it well. And besides from that, like, to have their menu be available to not just Graham Avenue folks, but people who can get there in a train stop is pretty fucking awesome. And we have 100 seats, essentially, that, you know, you don't have to go wait in line. You're not greeted by a hostess. You're greeted by owners, and the chefs are in the kitchen, and we're all kind of collaborating on making this Ed and Bev's for the week, for the month, for the time that they're here. Yeah. So
what does Detroit-style food mean?
So, and you know, so Ed and Bev's has it's new. It's less than a year old, and so in a way, it's still we're figuring it out ourselves and working through what we want Ed and Bev's to be. But it's a diner that has some Detroit influences.
Because you guys are from Detroit, right?
We are. We're from the suburbs outside of Detroit, and so everyone's been to a diner. They exist all over the United States. The unique features of a Detroit diner and why they're called a Coney Island is because they have a ton of Greek influence, which has trickled down to lots of diners in other cities. But in Detroit specifically, the diners are called Coney Islands, and they have Greek themed items on the menu. So you can obviously get a burger and you can get a breakfast plate, but you also can get saganaki, which is like flaming cheese. You can get spanakopita, which is spinach pie.
Who doesn't want flaming cheese?
I love that. I love it with lemon. It's so good.
And there's a chicken lemon rice soup, which is you know, it's a Greek dish, which you really don't find it at like a traditional like 24-hour random diner in New York City. And so those are kind of three items. I could go on and on, but those are three items that they're everywhere in Detroit. And they don't really carry through to a random diner in Los Angeles or something like that, unless it's a Greek-style diner. So that makes the Detroit diner slightly different than in other cities.
And, of course, the Coney dog, which is a hot dog covered with chili, mustard, and onions, mm-hmm. which everybody takes very seriously. Everyone's got their own particular style
in Detroit,
Coney
they
dog.
They take it very seriously.
Yeah. Well, and in this room.
Right, of course.
So pretty seriously here.
It's very
but
serious.
We took the Coney dog as a starting point and have made our own version of everything, sourcing the hot dogs really carefully, sourcing the meat for the chili, and cooking it from scratch. And a lot of care and a lot of attention goes into all the details of it.
Diner ingredients I've tasted.
Best diner ingredients.
When we launched Ed and Bev's, you know, some of the Detroit press that covered it and some of the people that were commenting were like, this is a travesty, you're selling a Coney dog for, you know, X amount of dollars that, you know, it's triple the price of what it is in Detroit. Detroit, it's very specific. Like, you get your brand. It's like it's a Kogel hot dog, and the chili is probably
Hormel or something.
Yeah, it's from, you know, it's some large producer. And look, I love Detroit diners probably more than almost anybody else, but the ingredients aren't that great. But that's not really what you're looking for in Detroit. You're looking for a fast, cheap meal. So we wanted to take that and do it our own way. So we are doing grass-fed chili, and we're doing Brooklyn Hot Dog Company hot dogs, and that's important to us. And that's cool if somebody doesn't really want to spend $6.50 on a Coney dog, because there's a $2 version in Detroit that you can get. But if you want,
but you'd have to pay for the plane ticket.
There you go. Yeah. If you want like a really, if you want a really good version, then that's sort of like what we're offering at Humboldt and Jackson.
Yeah, but it's sort of the same argument, like when anyone appropriates like an ethnic cuisine, whether it be from Detroit or from, you know, China. There's something that happens like in the translation if you're trying to use, you know, like really responsible ingredients. So
And we had our first topless
diner.
Yeah, you should talk about it.
We had a regular customer. I'm not allowed to use his name, but he said to me while he was eating the breakfast, he got the grand slam, he got the breakfast plate, and he's like, I had a dog yesterday, but I don't want the dog again because I already had a dog, and my girlfriend told me about the dog, I can't have another dog. He said, I'm going to have another dog. And I said, if you have another dog, I'll pay for it. And he's like, if you pay for it, I'll eat it naked.
No thanks.
And I said, hey, listen.
How is that? How are you winning?
Yeah, that escalated quickly.
It escalated quickly.
Well, someone was dying to get naked and eat a dog.
So because, you know, we're not going to have his naked butt in the seat, I said, we'll take off your shirt. And so he ate his dog.
This is getting
topless.
Really weird. Like, it made it.
And it's
funny
a regular customer, so you don't know what they look like without their clothes on.
No.
And he had amazing tattoos all over his chest.
Oh.
So that was cool.
That's really what Ed and Bev's is about.
Yeah. Yeah. It's about, yo, it made him do something he would never, ever do.
Okay. Maybe he would do it, because it sounds like he really wanted to, though. Or maybe that's
how. It wasn't a lot of pushing, actually.
Yeah,
it was just like, hey, do you want to take your shirt off? Yeah, all right, I'll take my shirt.
Maybe he goes everywhere and just tries to get free hot dogs.
That's what happens in Detroit. Like, when people go to diners in Detroit, it's like.
It gets pretty wild at Coney Islands after about 1 a.m. I mean, I've seen some crazy shit, but I haven't actually seen someone voluntarily take off their
shirt.
It was 11:30 in the morning. Yeah.
So why Coney Island? Why is that the term? Is it someone from Detroit went to Coney Island, had a chili dog, and
we have
decided
been,
to do their own?
We are not actually a historical authority on this, but we have heard some theories.
You're closer than I am, I'm sure.
We've heard some theories that it has to do with when Greek immigrants came to the United States. They often stopped in New York. That was their first stop before moving further west. And so before people came to the Midwest and landed in Michigan, if they had a day off to take their family, they went to the boardwalk. And Coney Island was obviously like this majestical place where if you had just come to America, it was extremely exciting and it represented all these incredible opportunities. So when they moved to Detroit, it's actually the Karros family started Coney Islands. They are brothers, Bill and Gus. And they started a Coney Island and then they split and they're next to each other and they're bitter rivals called American Lafayette. And if you go to Detroit and you say to people like, what are you? They'll be like, I'm American. Oh, I'm Lafayette. It's like Yankee Mets. Like, you hate the other side, basically. And they serve the exact same food. It's literally identical. I'm pretty sure it's the exact same price. I bet if you did a side-by-side comparison, you wouldn't know. But anyways, so when they came to Detroit, they called it American and Lafayette Coney Island. So they're not called now they're called like diners subtext underneath, kind of, but they're called Coney Islands. And people get super confused, obviously.
Especially
in New York. A lot of people, when they saw Ed and Bev's, they sort of thought that it was some, you know, maybe like Russian or like ethnic concept from like our family that lived in Coney Island or like an offshoot of our Coney Island restaurant. So that's why we're focusing more on the diner, because it is diner food and we just want people to eat really good food. We don't want to confuse them and relay to them a historical
background.
That's pretty good though.
I would imagine there's a lot of conversation, and I'm sure the next question everybody asks is, who are Ed and Bev?
It's our grandparents. Yeah, so our mother's parents. So Edward and Beverly, and we used to go to Coney Islands all the time.
Yeah, they would take us all around. We've gone to probably 5 or 10 different ones in various parts of Detroit doing different stuff, and you just end up at a Coney Island in the afternoon. So that's like a big part of our memory, our food memories growing up. So we decided to name it for them.
You know how like you always know there's a Duane Reade within like 100 yards of you in New York City? It's pretty much like that in Detroit. With a diner, you're like almost always within.
Yeah, but can, but who
distance?
Who the hell is Duane Reade?
Those are my
grandparents.
Really think it's like
those are your grandparents.
The corner is Duane and Reed.
Yeah. Is that
next
it? Is that where
show.
It all started? Yeah. Oh well, that was easy.
Well, the whole like
no heritage there.
Yeah.
Jackson.
Yeah, I mean there is such like an interesting like ethnology behind hot dogs and like all the different kinds. How we associate it as like this. Like very typically American food, but all the different sort of variations on it all have their own kind of like ethnic and historical lineage behind it.
So. We went pretty crazy sourcing hot dogs for this, which was awesome because we basically just ordered as many different hot dogs as we could to try to find one that worked well
And Bill and the Coney dog. Bill actually introduced us to the hot dog we're using now.
Yeah. Oh, so we actually switched to Brooklyn, and it's amazing. And we went through like a couple varieties before we kind of settled on them.
I'm so glad you're working with them. They're really great company.
Yeah, and they're awesome dogs. So like, we're supporting them, and they're here, and also it happens to be like the best product that we found.
So what is the right dog for you guys?
Well,
is it pork? Is it beef? Is it both?
We actually have slightly different opinions on this as well. So Max will just
we've gone back and forth
of us,
whether there needs to be a beef dog or a pork dog. Right now we're using a blend, but I think the most important thing is that it's a natural casing hot dog. Mm-hmm. So it has to have a snap, and you have to cook it on the flat top to get that crisp. It's not a dirty water dog, mm-hmm, or even a clean water dog. It's got to get cooked on the flat top and get that snap there. That's kind of like the main thing.
Yeah.
And it's a long dog.
It's a long dog.
It's a little bit longer than usual.
Yeah. To me, it's also important that you use like a super soft bun. It doesn't need to be Martin's, but we use Martin's, but it has to be, you want the snap of the dog to be like the actual texture of the sandwich, because you want the bread to be actually a little soggy from the chili.
Do you grill the bread?
We do. Yeah, we like kiss it on the flat top, but it's not supposed to be crunchy.
Who did that?
That was me. That was me. Sorry. No, there's no guy. That guy's sleeping. He like didn't even turn the show on.
God?
Yeah.
So you also have Samesa going on right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And
so
we're doing that tomorrow.
Monday
at Humbledon Jackson.
You're doing that
one
tomorrow
night.
At Humbledon Jackson.
Tomorrow night. We're doing one night only.
One night only.
Which is great because not that we had Samesa in here before, but we worked with Max on our first New Year's Eve extravaganza, and he cooked amazing chicken shawarma at the bar. On its own spit,
yeah.
And it was very
illegal.
However, really? No one got hurt, and I, honestly, people have always said like that was one of the best meals. Our regular customers like was the best time. New Year's was great. We had great music and everything, but the meal was so worth the price tag, and that they can't wait for Samesa to come back and like provide that same jazziness to the shawarma.
Okay,
meal,
I think. So that's tomorrow night. Yeah. Are there still tickets?
Yeah, it's just walk-in. So
oh, okay.
We definitely have out. Come one, come all. We've got space, yeah.
So someone could potentially get, like, double the Sussmans in one day.
We're really hoping that someone will have lunch at 3 and then loiter at the bar until 5 drinking and then have a shawarma.
I think they should
like
loiter at the bar, go home and nap.
Yeah.
Like, do some drinking, go home and nap. Like,
no, just stay and drink straight through, right?
Because, like, what else do you want but, like, a pita and some chicken? That's kind of the way.
There you go, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, breakfast plate turn into shawarma and dip.
Yeah. And we're doing some new dishes.
That's a Monday.
Keep drinking until it feels
right.
Yeah.
We're doing new stuff tomorrow that we've never done anywhere before, so we're pretty excited about that. We're debuting some new dishes at HJ tomorrow.
Oh, wow. Okay. Are you eventually going to bring those to Samesa in Bergen?
No. Bergen is totally set the way that it is, and mm-hmm. Bergen is kind of like, it's supposed to be built for speed. it's because it's order at the counter. We don't do what you would consider like a plated dish. It's not. But the cool thing about Humboldt and Jackson is that you have that interaction like with a server. Feels like a true restaurant. And so we're going to be doing some stuff tomorrow that kind of speaks to that type of eating experience, like where you can have a drink and then you can mm-hmm. order your food and like not everything comes out together on a tray,
yeah.
Which is fine. Like Bergen is great for that, for like large groups and everything. But tomorrow we want people to come and actually have like a really nice dinner at Humboldt.
I think a lot of chefs that come in use our space for just that reason, to try stuff, you know, that they normally, not that they couldn't do, but like, what could we do next?
Yeah, it's like a great place to just be a little more experimental.
And our regular customers love it. Like they just, you know, they love when we have these different events where it's like Burmese noodles to Samesa to, you know, these guys.
Yeah, I have a question for
pizzas.
Sam.
Yeah,
if you don't
Sam
mind.
The man.
Talking.
Hey, Sam.
Hey.
So do you have, like, particular wine pairings in mind for Semesa tomorrow, for example, or, like, every time there's a new pop-up, how do you think about the wine program?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I stay busy because we have so many different chefs coming through. So it's fun for me, you know. We have, obviously, our own Humboldt and Jackson menu that we curate very carefully, and we try to do amazing pairings. We brought the perfect pairing today, which is the beets with the whipped goat cheese and the Tazi from Arizona Stronghold. But, yeah, I mean, it's basically, you know, when a new chef comes in, you know, I try to get the flavor profile and see where they're at as far as, you know, what style they're trying to go for, if they want a lighter style, if they want it to be, you know, more hearty. And then I'll go through my library and see what fits best.
So how does something like the Burmese noodle pop up? I mean, that just seems really unconventional to, like, try and pair that with an... Well, no, not the food. That sounds great. But, like, to pair it with American wine. Like, how do you think about it when you have, you know, different...
There's a lot of versatility in American wine now. You know, people think that it's, you know, Butterball, Oak Bomb Chardonnays and things like that. But a lot of people are making a lot of old world wine styles in America now. A lot of natural wines, a lot of things that just have, like, indigenous yeast and kind of, like, do their own thing and get funky. So there's a lot of different styles to choose from now. So, but it's fun, you know. It's being able to, you know, go into my, you know, my weapon case and see, like, okay, what's going to work with Burmese food, because I've never actually paired with Burmese food.
Exactly. Yeah,
yeah, but that's the fun part, you know, is being able to experiment, and that's really what pairing is. Is trial and error, experiment, see what works, you know?
Yeah. So my next question is for the Sussmans. You guys are doing pop-up here. You've got, like, a stand at Bergen. Are you hoping to just keep being these kind of, like, nomadic chefs? Or do you guys...
It's a million-dollar question.
...want to settle down?
That's,
like, what you have to do. Eli, single?
Yeah.
Very single.
Very simple. That's a great question, and I'm going to now answer it in a roundabout cryptic fashion, of course we would love to find a concrete home for both of them, and we have gotten close and have not been successful. We're learning a ton about the New York real estate market, and it's extremely challenging to pull that trigger, but the great thing about spaces like Humboldt and Jackson is that it allows us to get our food in front of people. It allows us to cook, which is really what we want to be doing, and also continue to, like, refine the processes so that when we find a spot, we're ready to go. So that being said, like, the nomadic life is okay for right now, but yeah, we would love to find a spot and find something concretely. It's just nothing has cohesively come together for that yet, but Bergen has been awesome for sort of that exact reason, which is, like, everyone knows that everything in Bergen kind of rotates, so it keeps people excited about what's going on there. It allows us to figure out what works, train a staff, try to do best practices, get all that down so that when we find a spot, we can just kind of move it from point A to point B, or have them function together. But what we've actually really been doing is, like, we've been expanding our catering significantly. So it's kind of actually been a blessing in disguise that we don't have our own independent space that we have to worry about, because our commissary kitchen already functions as a secondary space. It's a lot to kind of juggle. So we're still, like, within the first year of it being around, and we hope that by the end of 2016 that we're in our own space.
So let's say that space appears, which I'm sure it will after this radio show airs.
Like tomorrow
you'll get a call. So what would it be? Would it be Semesa meets Ed and Bev's, and then you guys also have all these recipes from your various cookbooks? I mean, you're all over the place food-wise.
Yeah, they live independently of each other.
Okay.
Even though that they were next to each other at Bergen, we don't necessarily want to do, like, a Taco Bell Pizza Hut. Even though that would be
a Baskin Robbins Dunkin' Donuts.
That would be cool.
But no. Could you merge the? I mean, they're obviously very different food.
Yeah, That's not actually our goal, okay, to have them always be like intertwined or live together. I mean, obviously at HJ, like we're doing the pop-up at night tomorrow and we do Ed and Bev's during the day, but they can kind of function independently of each other. We're doing another pop-up in April that's just going to be Samisa somewhere else. So for an extended period of time. And obviously Samisa lives at Bergen for right now. So I think our top priority would be a space for Samisa. That's okay. Like what we've been, that's what we've been really been looking around and focusing on. But we're not ruling out finding something for Ed and Bev's too.
Mm-hmm. So I want to know, where can people kind of follow you? How can they figure out where you're going next?
That's on you again.
You mean like how can they?
Yeah,
stalk, like what's our Instagram?
Like
or
they
something?
Would love, oh, to stalk you. Mostly like your website. To,
yeah, well,
to
our
know where you're gonna
our
be
websites
next.
Are just the name of the. So it's edandbevs.com and samisanyc.com, and then we have our Instagram is the Sussmans, and it's basically where we post everything about all the events that we do and
everything about everything.
New recipes. It's the main kind of hub. And then we have a blog that gets updated between once and twice every year.
Fantastic.
So yeah, that's a really good spot to read things that I type at 2 a.m. and think are funny pretty much only for myself.
Last Christmas.
Yeah.
Are you guys doing anything for Passover?
When is that again?
Oh,
I don't know.
I'll probably eat a lot of bread and anger my mother.
No. I mean, are you cooking anywhere?
Oh.
Not like, what are you... I don't care what you're doing.
Yeah, we actually came on the show to announce that we're doing a Passover dinner at Humboldt and Jackson.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's 17 courses.
Yeah, 17 courses.
All gefilte fish.
And you pay in gold chocolate coins.
Oh, I am so in.
I don't know. We have not thought that far ahead. I don't even know when Passover is.
It's in the spring.
Aha.
Well, and then Bill, where can we send listeners to check out what's going on at Humboldt?
Our website's pretty informative. Pam takes a big part in that at humboldtandjackson.com, and Instagram is weird. It's 434 Humboldt, not Humboldt and Jack. Believe it or not, Humboldt and Jackson or H&J, an email, if you try to, it just reads like hand job. So it doesn't really,
right?
We've shied away from that. We've tested that, and although hand jobs are good, we can't have that. So 434 Instagram, and then humboldtandjackson.com, and then, you know, our website is very up to date. Pam kind of updates it like almost every day, unlike Eli. With the blog.
Total opposite.
So they actually need to start something new.
So Ed and Bev's is going to be there all March.
All of March, Monday through Friday.
For lunch. But are there different dinner things happening this month as well?
Yeah.
Well,
tomorrow is
Samisa,
uh-huh, which we're really excited about because, mm-hmm, I just want to eat. It's the only reason why. It's actually me and my Pam's birthday. So we're coming in for dinner.
Sweet.
And we're celebrating 10
Make
years married.
Aw, so. Mazels.
Yeah, mazels.
Candle and a shawarma. Here.
Yeah, candle and a shawarma. And then we have, this Saturday, we have the Burmese noodle pop-up. 8 different styles of Burmese noodles, which is, if people don't know about Burma, it's more like the flavor profile of Indian and Thai food. So it's really amazing.
With special wine pairings.
With special wine pairings from Sam.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're doing a really fun St. Paddy's Day whiskey pairing dinner with an amazing chef. So that's going to be really fun. We're planning now for like end of summer already. We're like kind of in like fashion.
And also
fashion.
We have the vegan Easter brunch.
Oh, we have an Easter brunch with do you guys know
Easter
Mississippi
brunch?
Vegan?
No.
Okay, well, get to know him and his glamorous
what
life.
What is a vegan Easter brunch? No eggs.
Well, yeah, he does Creole vegan. And he actually has a monthly pop-up at our place twice a month.
I'm there.
There's like a million things going on.
Yeah, there's a lot. Yeah, check the website.
Eli, Max, Bill, Pam, Sam, thank you so much for being on The Morning After. We're
Don't go away.
Thanks.
Take a break
Thanks.
Here, and we're going to come back with The Morning After quiz.
Ooh.
This is Let's Not by Shadowbox.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market, America's healthiest grocery store with more than 400 locations throughout the United States. Download the Whole Foods Market app on your smartphone for recipes, sales, information, and digital coupons. Or visit WholeFoodsMarket.com to find a store closest to you.
And we're back here on The Morning After. Max, Eli, Bill, Sam, Pam. The Sussmans are doing their Coney Island pop-up Ed and Bev's at Humboldt and Jackson this month. And you know that. You all know that. But what do you know about Ed DeBevics?
Oh.
Ooh.
Anybody?
Oh,
anybody?
Yeah.
The rude 50s themed diner chain that may or may not be out of business. I'm not sure if it still exists. When I was in high school, it was definitely around. Anybody? Has anybody ever heard of Ed DeBevics?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, I've been to Ed DeBevics in L.A. It's nice. You get, you know, Marilyn Monroe dancing on top of the bar, singing to
kind
you
of like the topless guy.
You drinks,
like,
and then Buddy Holly, very similar.
A lot
that was kind of based off of Ed DeBevics. So you have a lot of old school impersonators, you know, Buddy Holly and things like that.
That sounds
and
fun.
And they're the servers, and then they break out into dance.
They break out and dance the song, but they're also, like, traditionally rude to you, which this began in Chicago, and that's kind of like a thing in Chicago where people just, like, yell at you about what you're ordering and make fun of you. Chicago's, like, a really nice city, but there's, like, three restaurants that I can think of off the top of my head where they're actually supposed to be rude to you.
Hmm.
Wiener Circle, Billy Goat Tavern, and Ed DeBevics, I guess.
Wow. They have a lot of, like, inner rage.
I guess so.
Yeah.
I guess so.
It's cold.
Anyway, here we go. Multiple choice, guys. This is the Morning After quiz.
You're
three
all
questions.
On the same team.
I thought that was the quiz already. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I did, too. That was the one.
That was the first question.
All right. First question. What is the name of the actual diner that inspired Ed DeBevics? Is it A, Starshine? Is it B, Pinup Paradise Diner? Or is it C, Homesick Diner?
Gross.
C.
I'd say A, Starshine.
Is there a wrong answer?
I would say A.
Can we look it up on the phone?
No.
Oh, okay. So.
It's a quiz.
I'll guess A.
A.
I'd say A, because there's a lot of stars there.
A, Starshine? No, actually, Pam, you would have been right if they listened to you. It's Homesick.
I got ignored.
I've also found some other amazing diner names, like the Crispy Biscuit and the No Wait Diner.
Nice.
It's enticing.
That's a good one.
Yeah,
I like the No Wait Diner. Okay, question two. Started in Chicago in 1983, just like me. Ed DeBevics was known for its rude waiters and snarky signs. Which of these is an actual Ed DeBevics sign posted at the restaurant? Is it A, you are what you eat, you horrible, horrible person? Is it B, I scream, you scream, the police come, it's awkward? Or is it C, we are not responsible for children trampled in the aisles?
I like the last one.
I think C.
I don't know if it's right, but I like that one a lot.
Everybody in unison?
Sure.
It is C.
You horrible person.
I really wish that it was you are what you eat, you horrible, horrible person.
Where do you find your
Did you make up the other two
answers.
Wrong answers?
Yeah, yeah.
They come from her mind.
Yeah, yours were good.
You scream, I scream, you scream, the police come, it's awkward, was actually like a sign outside of like the Tasty Delight or something like that that I found on the internet. Yeah. All right, final question. Who did Chicago restaurateur Rich Melman of Let Us Entertain You have in mind when he created Ed DeBevics? Is it A, a 50-something Polish guy from Chicago who loves beer and bowling? Is it B, an overnight trucker with an addiction to breakfast for dinner? Or is it C, a crabby taxi cab driver who refuses to acknowledge any era but the 1950s?
A.
B.
C.
Oh, man, we are
split.
Not in agreement.
Split.
A.
I say A.
C.
B.
All right, for those who said A, yeah, it's A. He didn't try
Pam.
Too hard, but he's like...
I'm 2 out of 3.
Always listen
he's
to
like,
Pam.
It's this guy, Ed DeBevics, who just likes beer and bowling and, you know, and some...
Very conceptual.
Yeah, deep
he's just, like,
there.
Drinking some old style, and...
His name is very Polish.
He's real rude.
Yeah.
He's rude. Anyway.
Rich nailed it.
Are they rude?
It.
Are they rude
it.
Because... Our people, it started because it was the customers itself were annoying. Because we have a couple places like that in Philly where places are now being mean to people because people are just such idiots.
I would, as a front of house person, probably say there's maybe
both.
Yes, that. And no, I think the Homesick Diner, like this woman was like,
if you like it, eat it. If you don't, get out. That was kind of like the idea. Right. So that's where Ed DeBevix came from. But I celebrated my 17th birthday there.
That's great.
And yeah.
Congrats.
Hey,
yes.
Thanks,
guys.
Yesterday?
Well,
yesterday.
100%. Yeah. Getting close. Well, thank you all for being on the show. Eli, Max, Bill, Pam, Sam.
You just love doing that.
Just doing my best, because last show I had somebody with a really hard name, so I appreciate the like single syllable names.
All three letters, more or less.
We'll see you next week on The Morning After.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.